Issues Etc. guests are frequent contributors to the Lutheran Witness magazine. The Lutheran Witness is a must-have resource for every Issues Etc. listener. You can receive an annual print and digital subscription for less than $20. Learn more at cph.org/witness or by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Interpreting the world from a Lutheran perspective, the Lutheran Witness magazine. cph.org/witness or 1-800-325-3040. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We've come to that time in the broadcast week where it's time to open your email and interact with our listeners, as we love to do. Also, the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382, and the email address, talkback@issuesetc.org.
Let's begin with an email from Jim in Florida about your latest interview with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller on the humiliation and exaltation of Christ. Jim writes, "At the discussion with Pastor Wolfmiller, I was amazed that he did not see the incarnation as the beginning of his humiliation. There is a world too small of a term of difference between the human nature he assumed at his birth versus the glorified human nature he received at his resurrection. His human nature before his glorification is not the same as afterwards. To be born among cattle and sheep, to be a bloody little infant soiling his diapers is truly humiliating. Ask any senior citizen with a continence issue if it's not humiliating. To submit to his mother and stepfather growing up also counts as a humiliation. To have such dense disciples must also count as a humiliation of sorts. Getting tired and hungry and a host of other things was also his humiliation. His physical human nature was radically improved at his resurrection. No, his humiliation began in time at the incarnation, even while in Mary's womb," concludes Jim in Florida.
Well, a couple problems here. First of all, Pastor Brian Wolfmiller didn't say that the humiliation didn't start at the incarnation. That is where it starts. But the incarnation itself is not what Pastor Wolfmiller was saying and taking pains to point out, is that the incarnation itself is not part of his humiliation. It is not part of his state of humiliation for him to assume into his divine nature a perfect human nature. I disagree that his human nature is somehow improved after his glorification. He has exactly the same human nature that he has. The humiliation of Christ, it's easy to misunderstand. That's why I asked Pastor Wolfmiller a question about our misconceptions about what humiliation means in this case. Strictly speaking, it's not the circumstances of his life, the humiliating circumstances of his life. Those are a consequence of his humiliation, but they're not what we mean by the state of Christ's humiliation. What we mean is that as both God and man, fully incarnate, he chose not to exercise his full divine power while in his state of humiliation. He did not lay aside his divinity, but he laid aside the powers and the prerogatives of his divinity while he carried out the act of salvation from his conception to his death. So we're not talking about the humiliating circumstances of Jesus' life, although those are certainly true. But we're speaking not about those, but we're speaking about how during his time, for the sake of saving us, he did not exercise his divine power in his incarnation. He occasionally did. Always, never for himself, but always for others. But he didn't exercise it always as he could have. So it is not correct to say that Jesus' human nature somehow undergoes a change after his resurrection. It does not. It's the same human nature. But after his resurrection, he now exercises his divine power fully in his incarnation.
Did you say his nothing changed bodily post-resurrection? If that's the case, do we have instance of Jesus going through walls and doors?
He certainly could have.
He could have.
But he could have. Yeah. He could have done all those things. He could have exercised what appears to be some sort of illocal mode of presence where he can suddenly appear where it would be physically impossible for him to appear. There's also something about Jesus after his resurrection again, exercising his divine powers in their fullness, that makes him sometimes unrecognizable. They don't really know if it's him. He is able to either hide his identity, as he did with the Emmaus disciples, and then reveal it, or as in the case of John 21, they know it's Jesus, but they're kind of tempted to say, "Who are you?" But they don't say it because they know it's him. Something about his appearance or something confused them as to his identity, at least in the backs of their minds. So Jesus always could do everything that he does now, but he chose not to for our sake. And that's the whole point of the humiliation.
David writes, "What's your opinion on Joel Osteen? I came across him on YouTube a short time ago and watched a few of his videos. It sounds good and positive and makes sense. He references the Bible and quotes from it. It also seems very self-help oriented and like you are doing the work and not God, or you are letting God do something for you. Looking for a good Lutheran opinion," writes David.
Well, we have done dozens and dozens of shows involving Joel Osteen over the years, and he's really got a long history with us. We have reviewed, I think, every one of his books. And as I always say, they're all the same book. They just have a different cover. We've reviewed his sermons back in the day when we were doing sermon reviews. We've made many, many attempts to interview Joel Osteen himself. Jeff and I even made a little pilgrimage to Joel Osteen's church when we were in Houston years ago, just to see for ourselves. Joel wasn't there. I think his praise band leader was filling in for him, but his mom was there. We got to see her. So we've spent a lot of time talking about Joel Osteen. Have I written a journal article about Joel Osteen?
I don't know. You might have done a book review, maybe?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe it was a book review. I'm not quite sure. You know, Joel, I think, is a genuinely nice person, but his theology is what you call word faith theology. He'll never tell you that, but it is. It's the theology he inherited from his father, who founded that church down in Houston, Texas. What you hear from Joel comes from a theological place where he believes that you have the ability to speak reality into existence. What you say, that's what's called word faith. What you say creates reality, whether it's positive or negative. And that's why Joel is so darn positive all the time, because he dare not say anything negative, because that would call into existence a negative reality. So it's closer to Oprah Winfrey's, what was it, The Secret, where you kind of think about something and you beckon the universe to give you what it is you want. It's much closer to that than it is to Orthodox Christianity.
Yeah, I don't think Oprah wrote The Secret, right? She was a promoter of it.
Yeah, she was a big promoter of The Secret. Right. But she believed that's the secret of her success, she said, was being able to visualize and call the universe, bend the will of the universe toward what she wanted.
We've done so much Joel Osteen that, you know, I have to clean this computer up periodically. It doesn't matter where I look. More Joel Osteen files.
Yes, we've talked about him a lot.
So it's a great opportunity to promote the search engine. This is what I did for David. If you go to issuesetc.org, towards the upper right-hand column, there's an eyeglass where you type in a topic, a guest. You just type in Joel Osteen, which I did, and all kinds of past interviews came up. Hank Hanegraaff on the teaching influence of Joel Osteen. We've got a review of Joel Osteen's The Power of I Am, Blessed in the Darkness book review. So there's all kinds of Joel Osteen past episodes you can draw upon.
I don't know if we've reviewed every one of his books, but we've reviewed a lot of his books. And then eventually it kind of becomes the same show over and over again, because it really is the same book over and over again.
There are a ton of them that are in LPR. Aren't there some that we're running on the best of?
I don't know.
Yes, Craig, but why would somebody, when they can listen to the podcast and search for it, wait for it to come up someday on our 24/7 Sacred Talk station?
Oh, I'm just saying, whenever we flip the files over there, sometimes I see them on the screen.
Correct.
Joel's in there.
It's a great question. What is expected of a husband and father to spiritually lead his wife and children and bring the children up in the faith? My husband is present when I teach the small catechism or Bible to our children. He always attends church services and the Bible studies I want to go to, and he encouraged me to pray in times of trouble. But after many discussions, he does not want to open a Bible to study on his own, Does a man need to be studious with the word of God to lead his family? Am I wrong to expect that? Great question.
I think given just what the information I have in your question, I would say you are right to expect that. Now, you must understand some men are more willing to do this. They don't have a hostility towards Christianity, the Christian faith, but they're more willing to take a leadership role than others are. And that's really what you're wondering about is, can he be the one to instigate this teaching of the children and going to church rather than, it just sounds like he's being more passive about it. He's not resistant to it. You should give thanks for that he's not resistant to it, but that he's just more passive about it. And it may just well be that you could ask him and say, can you lead this? And if he says, I just really don't feel like doing that, have a conversation, go and talk with your pastor, the three of you, and let your pastor lead him gently toward his responsibility as a Christian father. That's the very, very best advice that I can give you. We're going through listener email and the issues, et cetera, comment line on this Thursday, May the 5th. A little bit more on the other side of the break.
I'm going to focus mainly on the realm of education and the assault that's underway there.
Former U.S. Attorney General Bill Barr talking about his presentation at the 2022 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Historically, education was always viewed in the West as a parental and religious function, not the state's. For 100 years, public education was not hostile to Christianity. Starting in the 1960s, it really went on a crusade against Christianity, first by trying to strip out any vestige of traditional religion, but more recently by trying to affirmatively substitute their own ideologies for traditional religious belief, and it's become a tool of indoctrination.
You can meet and hear Bill Barr at this year's Making the Case Conference, June 24th and 25th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more at issuesetc.org.
Luther had Wartburg. We have Collinsville. You're listening to Issues Etc.
And when he had said these things, as they were looking on, he was lifted up, and a cloud took him out of their sight. And so Jesus ascended into the heavens and began his session, his sitting at the right hand of God. What does ascension mean for the church? Well, if you've ever wondered that question, you need to pick up your copy of the May issue of the Lutheran Witness, where you'll hear all about how, by his ascension, he brings gifts to men. To order your copy, visit cph.org/witness or visit our website, witness.lcms.org. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/lutheracademy.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going through listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line.
Bill Barr, shall we?
Sure.
Eric, Indianapolis, thank you for your patient, measured responses to the endless barrage of emails you receive about vaccines. Bill Barr, did you know he's speaking at the 2020 Making the Case Conference? And poor old Terry Mattingly. Perhaps when your disgruntled listeners go to kiss the icon of the former president that they have above their home altar, they will remember your even-handed approach and make space on their calendar for the conference. God willing, they might learn something. Thanks for your sense of humor, a rare commodity these days, concludes Eric in Indianapolis.
Well, and speaking of learning something, yesterday Bill Barr called here because we had scheduled a recording session with him, a short one, so that he could record a spot for his upcoming speaking at our conference. You do know he's speaking at our conference. Jeff just said, tell us about your upcoming thing, open-ended question. Tell us about your presentation. And he talked for several minutes. All right. I got to, and since the spot is only, what, 60 seconds long or something like that, I got to edit it down to its essence and to its proper length so that we could fit it in the spot. Did we just run the spot?
Yes. We just heard it during the break.
So I got to listen to this whole 2 minutes of Bill Barr just kind of extemporizing on his upcoming presentation. And I learned three things, the three things that I actually included in the spot, if you listen to it. So there's a lot to learn from this man. And he brings not only the experience, the legal expertise, and the conviction to speak on the attack on religious freedom. So even in that spot, I learned three things that I didn't know before.
Now, I know we have listeners who believe that Bill Barr is part of the deep state. But after listening to that recorded summary of his conference presentation, here's what I immediately thought. Here's your next Secretary of Education.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point. Because he's going to be speaking about the assault in the classroom for the most part.
He's going to be talking about the progressive assault of the Constitution, but he sees that most notably in education. Now, I don't know why Bill Barr would want to go back to serve our country in this manner, but man, can you imagine having a two-time Attorney General being Secretary of Education?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we could actually dismantle the U.S. Department of Education finally.
Well, that's what Joy Pullman's been saying for a long time. We don't need it. It's expensive and it only causes problems. So,
another Bill Barr email. Mark in Fenton, Missouri. I often hear progressives criticized for so easily being triggered. I think many conservatives enjoy pointing this out. Listening to the email and comment line these past few months, I've noticed how Bill Barr is triggering many of the program's listeners. Just sharing my observation. The program continues to be great, is great. Thank you, and thank you for the feedback. Mark in Fenton, Missouri.
Well, and thank you very much. And I think I've said enough over the course of the last couple of months since we've been getting some heat on Bill Barr speaking is that it all suffice it to say, ask yourself why it outrages you, why it makes you frustrated, angry, not want to come to the conference. And the thing that I found most interesting is kind of the biblical language that some of the listeners have adopted to respond to, like, wolf in sheep's clothing. And the one that was most telling to me that someone called him like Judas Iscariot, which would cast who as Jesus? I mean, just fill in the blank. Who would that cast as Jesus? And I always ask the question, when did Bill Barr go from being the trusted right-hand man of your admired president, and you're free to admire that president all you want. When did he go from being the trusted right-hand man to being Judas Iscariot or a wolf in sheep's clothing? What changed? Because there was a point in time when you believed him to be fully qualified, a trusted member of the government, and then something happened and you didn't. What happened? Ask yourself that question and just honestly answer it.
Well, the answer would be, for most people, would be he didn't overturn the election. He did not do enough research and ballot counting and to get the true results of the election.
And his response has been two things on that. One, it wasn't his job to do that. But I don't know enough about the position of the Attorney General to answer whether that's a valid reason. And number two, he did look into it insofar in his capacity as Attorney General and didn't find any significant evidence that would overturn the election. That's not what President Trump wanted to hear, but that's what he found.
Well, most of our listeners haven't been triggered by Bill Barr speaking at the 2022 Issues, Etc. Making the Case conference. We're already at 500, which is the attendance limit. We always have a few last-minute no-shows, so we'll take a few more registrations. Making the Case is Friday, June 24th and Saturday, June 25th at Concordia University, Chicago. You'll find a conference schedule, and you can register online at issuesetc.org or give Deaconess Lynn Fredrickson a call. Say, I want to get in at the last minute for the Making the Case Conference in River Forest, Illinois, June 24th and 25th. Give her a call, 618-223-8385. Here's another question, a suggestion about making the case. Ryan says, one of the recent listener email comment line segments, there was an almost throwaway comment regarding potentially having a future conference in Arizona. Please do. I don't think any of your speakers would object to spending a few winter days in Tucson or Phoenix. Well, that's for sure, Ryan.
Well, they're both beautiful places. A little hot, but...
In the winter.
Oh, in the winter, I guess.
In the winter, it would be great. It would be great. You know, the older I get, the cold bothers me more.
Yeah.
But yeah, a conference in the winter. But we've talked about this. Two things. Number one is we need a venue that can hold at least 500 people with a cafeteria that also can feed 500 people. And secondly, we can't do two conferences in a year.
We tried it. We did it several years in a row. And what we discovered was we spent all year promoting conferences. And we have a pretty well thought out and pretty tight development schedule here at Issues, et cetera, because our listeners are our supporters. So there's only so much airtime and there's only so much space for you to listen. And to put it quite frankly, we need to be able to ask our listeners for money. And if we're constantly promoting a conference, we're not able to do that the way that we ought to.
But we don't have the staff to pull two 400 member plus conferences every year. We simply don't have the staff to do that.
We experimented with the idea. We took one to Houston, and where else did we go, Jeff?
Dallas.
To Dallas, and they were successful, but we spent all year doing nothing but planning for and gearing up for the conference. So one a year is all we're going to do, and the reason Chicago is because it's an ideal venue. It's a very friendly venue to us. It's centrally located, and if you can get past the constant delays at both airports, it's not a bad place to visit.
And it's a... major hub, or it's a hub for major airlines. Quickly, Joseph, Knoxville, Tennessee, thank you for making Issues, Etc. free to anyone who will listen. I love the various topics ranging from church history to biblical commentary on modern events. Thank you, and may God bless everybody at Lutheran Public Radio. Thank you for listening, Joseph, in Tennessee.
It will always be free to listen to. We toyed around when we were first coming back after our cancellation years and years and years ago. It was suggested to us by a knowledgeable person that we might want to put it behind a paywall. At the time, paywalls were not as common as they are now. And we rejected the idea, one, because we didn't know how to do that, and number two, it's a completely untested idea. I hate paywalls. I hate going on Twitter, clicking a link to the Los Angeles Times, and every single time they give me three lines of an article that I want to read, and then they make me encounter their paywall. So I don't want you to encounter it with Issues, etc., ever. We will be right back.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Repentance and forgiveness, sin and grace, law and gospel. More than cliches, real preaching for real people in need of hearing the real Christ. Christ for you and the divine service at St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, Illinois, where we gather every Saturday night at 6 and on the Lord's Day, Sunday mornings at 7:45 and 10. Look for the Church of the Neon Cross on I-55 between exits 30 and 33. Find us on the web, stpaullutheranchurchhamel.org. St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, where there is the forgiveness of sins, life and salvation for the people of God.
Unshaken from Psalm 16:8 is the theme for the 44th academic year at Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois. We engage young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and encouraging spiritual growth. Please help us provide tuition assistance to more students by making a tax-deductible gift at MELHS.org and click on the support page. Or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.